This is episode 12 of the Prepper Website Podcast. Today we are looking at articles that deal with how to make hardtack, stocking up for type 1 diabetes, and radio silence for communications without electronics. Hey, my name is Todd Sepulveda. I'm the editor of PrepperWebsite.com. This podcast is an audible version with some commentary of articles that have been posted on Prepper Website, a daily aggregator of preparedness information. These articles are some of the best that have been recently posted on PrepperWebsite.com. All article links and show information can be found on the PrepperWebsitePodcast.com. So let's go ahead and get started. First article comes to us from Survival Sullivan, and the title of the article is How to Make Hardtack. So this is a good little article that you definitely want to go and visit. But let's go ahead and get started on this one. When thinking about survival situations, food is always a priority. Sure, you can hunt, fish, or gather food. However, having food available for bugging in or bugging out is an ever better option. In my endless hunt for survival foods, I am primarily looking to fulfill a few needs. One is that the food must last a long time. Another is that it must be lightweight and compact. A third would be that it must satisfy some dietary need that is hard to fulfill otherwise. Hardtack is basically a dried biscuit that fits the profile of a good survival food. If kept dry, hardtack can last up to 150 years, so it is ideal for your pack or your food stockpile. Because it is dried, it is compact and lightweight. It is also high in calories and carbohydrates. Those are two commodities that are hard to come by in a survival situation. Another benefit of hardtack is that it is easy to make in almost any condition. This survival food has a long and proud history of proving its value. Both the ancient Romans and the ancient Egyptian civilizations used hardtack and typically gave it to their soldiers as rations. It is ideal as a ration for soldiers for the same reason it is ideal for survival situations. Sailors crossing vast oceans would take hardtack with them for the journey. It was baked four times to be sure it would survive the moisture from the sea. Often the biscuits would have to be soaked in pickle brine, coffee, or water to soften them enough to eat. Civil War soldiers were rationed several large biscuits per day and often used them as plates to eat perishable foods. They would then snack on the biscuits as they hiked. The Union Army would bake the biscuits twice and then let them sit for 6 months before issuing them to soldiers. This would ensure they were properly dried. Southern states were short on flour because of blockades put in place by the North, so when flour was available, they made huge batches. The process for making this food is incredibly simple. This is one of the reasons it makes for a great survival food. You can make hardtack with only two ingredients, and you can make it in almost any conditions, whether you have a gourmet kitchen, a gas grill, a camp stove, or a rustic campfire. You can make this staple. Start with 2 cups of flour and slowly add water. Your goal is to make it into a consistent dough that you can roll out and cut. If it gets too watery, add more flour. There is no point in kneading the dough since we are not making bread. On a flour table, roll out your dough with a floured rolling pin until it is about 1/4 inch thick. Then you can cut it into whatever shapes and sizes you like. Think about storage and purpose. You will want larger pieces if you might use it as a plate for other food. If you are packing it into a small space in a pack, you will likely want smaller pieces. It is important that all the pieces be the same shape and size so they cook at the same rate. You can use a ruler to cut a straight edge, or you can use cookie cutters, a jar, or a glass to cut various shapes. Preheat the oven to 250 degrees Fahrenheit. You next need to dock the biscuits. This means poking holes in the dough so it will dry properly and will not rise. You can use a fork, a nail, chopsticks, or a knife to poke evenly spaced holes all the way through the dough. As a general guide, you should cut 16 holes in a 3-inch by 3-inch square. This is the recipe used during the Civil War. Place the biscuits on an ungreased baking sheet and make sure they are evenly spaced. Cook them for 2 hours and then flip them over to cook for 2 more hours. Remove the biscuits from the baking sheet and place them on a cooling rack until they are room temperature. Repeat the baking process, cooking for another 2 hours on one side and 2 hours on the other side at 250 degrees Fahrenheit. move back to the cooling rack until room temperature. Hardtack in this form has very little flavor. There are things you can do to make the finished product more flavorful. However, keep in mind that the lack of moisture is what makes hardtack last as long as it does. You cannot modify the recipe in any way that adds moisture or it will spoil sooner. Salt is an ingredient that was often added to hardtack. Not only does it add flavor, but the human body needs some level of salt in the diet to keep functioning. Other grains can be added to the flour for texture and flavor. Spices can be added, or a little honey can give your hardtack a sweet taste while also adding valuable sugars. Dairy products like butter or cream can be added, but they will likely go rancid within a few weeks. Just a side note here, if anybody knows about adding honey, I'd really like to hear that. Hear a little bit more information about that, like how much honey, what would be too much. I think that would be a good add. Also, maybe some cinnamon. I don't know what that would do, if that would make it a little sweeter or definitely a different taste. All right, let's continue on. There are two primary reasons why hardtack might not last as long as you would like. One would be if moisture gets to the biscuits. Any moisture can cause mold to form, which would render the hardtack inedible. You are best to keep your hardtack in an airtight container or bag. Store your containers in a cool, dry place to ensure it keeps as long as possible. The other potential issue with hardtack is damage from pests. These biscuits are a perfect food source for bugs like weevils or for mice or rats. For this reason, you should try to keep your supply up off the ground. I also prefer hard, airtight containers to keep out the insects and pests that could ruin my stash. With most recipes, there is no need for a section on how to eat the finished product. However, hardtack is an exception. The biscuits are so hard that you often have to get creative to find a good way to eat it. As stated before, hardtack can be softened with liquids. This could be water, coffee, milk, vinegar, or any other liquid. It is sometimes added to stews or gravy to help thicken the dish. Some people have been known to soften hardtack and then fry it in grease or oil. This is one of the tastier preparations of this food. Okay, another side note. Love to hear from you in the comments section if you have done the frying thing with hardtack. Softening it up, what did it consist of softening it up, and then frying it. I'd like to hear a little bit more information on that. If you're going to eat hardtack without preparing it in some way, there is a proper way to do it. Break off a small piece and let it sit in your mouth to soften for a while. Eventually, you will get a softer consistency that you can chew. Also, be sure to have some water on hand, as the flour will suck all the moisture out of your mouth. The more time that passes as a survivalist and prepper, the more I think about things like food preservation. Whether we are talking about venison, fish, berries, mushrooms, or hardtack, it appears that dehydration is the key to long-term preservation. Keeping food cold is fine in certain circumstances. However, without electricity, there are times that keeping food cold is very difficult. By removing the moisture from a food, you eliminate the possibility of fungus or bacteria growing in that food. That is all that hardtack is. It is a form of bread with all of the moisture removed. In addition to lasting years and years, this survival food is lightweight and versatile. It is perfect to add to your bug out bag or to save for times when other food is not available. There are dozens of ways to make and prepare hardtack to give you a variety of flavors and textures. There is a good reason why soldiers and seamen have carried hardtack for thousands of years. When you are pushed to the limit and need vital energy, it is a great option for a snack. Over the years, hardtack has been known as pilot bread, cabin bread, ship biscuit, and sea bread. It has had so many nicknames because of how prolific it has been in the survival of man in the worst possible conditions. Not only do I like to keep some around the house, but I always like to take some with me on any camping or hiking trips. If you get a chance, make some up and integrate it into your prepping or survival strategy. Okay, so good little article there. There's a lot of links. Again, so you want to visit the article Survival Sullivan and check it out and click some of these links. Like I've said before, all the articles that I'm reading here on the PrepperWebsitePodcast.com, I do have on the episode show notes, so you can link to it very, very easily there. All right, let's go ahead and jump to the second article. This is one that you see come up every once in a while in the prepper community in articles. It is one of those that we really, you know, we really want to focus on. And if you have someone in your family with type 1 diabetes, you know how serious this is. And if not, then listen to this article anyway, because you will run into someone that needs to consider these things. So this is coming to us from 1776patriotusa.com. It's John Rourke's website. And the title of the website is Stocking Up for Type 1 Diabetics. Let's go ahead and start reading this one. Let me start by saying that if the practices I will describe offend for some reason, please stop. Please just move along. For most anyone with type 1 diabetes, cost and money are factors involved in the treatment and daily life of those with the disease. The bottom line is those with type 1 diabetes must have insulin in order to survive. Without it, their glucose levels will skyrocket and they will die. My oldest son has type 1 diabetes and I am very aware. Here are a few ways to stock up on supplies. Insulin. Insulin is extremely expensive and can only be obtained with a prescription. I am not familiar with government-provided insurance and prescription plans. However, getting the doctor to overwrite the prescription amount is key. If 2 vials of Novolog are required for a month, convince the doctor that 3 or 4 are really required. How to convince the doctor? One way is to tell the doctor a larger amount of insulin is administered per day than what really is. Yes, it is a lie. Unless you ask for a lot more than needed, he will likely write it for an extra bottle or two. This is also life-saving required substance that if something were to happen, the patient will die. Period. If the doctor writes the prescription for only the amount absolutely needed, call the doctor's office toward the end of the month and tell them you run out and need more. They are not going to decline giving what is needed to sustain life. Test strips, glucose meters, batteries. The same system used with insulin can be used with test strips. If blood sugar is checked 5 times per day, tell the doctor it is checked 10 times per day. Another method is to purchase what you can with insurance and then look to eBay for more. If no insurance is available, eBay can be a huge help. Depending on a brand, a month's worth of testing can be purchased for under $30. This is cheaper than many insurances. Another option is to talk to the doctor or pharmacist. They often will have a discount card and/or samples. This is especially true of glucose meters. Search online by the brand meter used and contact the company. They will often send out free ones as they make their money on test strips. Batteries. Most glucose meters use CR2032 lithium-ion batteries. Buying these at the pharmacy is not cheap. I purchased mine at the dollar store, you guessed it, for $1. Cartridges. Those with a pump require cartridges to dose insulin. Typically, these cartridges are disposed of after one use. I use them up to 3 times with no issues. This allows a building of inventory as prescriptions and shipments are controlled fairly tight. Syringes. Those who take insulin via syringes know that they must use it only once and throw away. Well, maybe not. Looking at the tip of a syringe, it dulls with each use, thus severely bruising and scarring can occur. In the past, I have used syringes up to 2 and no more. These shots were done fairly close to each other, time-wise, and of course were sterilized. Insulin delivery sites. Pump users require sites to deliver insulin just under the skin. These are supposed to be changed every few days. I typically get a week out of one. Thus, rather than a box of 10 lasting 30 days, it lasts 60 to 70 days. Being these cannot be bought over the counter, stocking up is not easy unless extending its usage time. The backup plan for running out of these is syringes. Diabetes is one of those diseases that the reality of any long-term SHTF situation is grave. Believe me, it is not something I enjoy thinking about. the first step is to stock up on needed supplies to prevent any short-term supply interruption from turning into a long-term disaster. All right, so a very serious topic there for anyone who has type 1 diabetes. So John is speaking from experience, and like I said, I do have a family member. I've thought about this previously and often, especially when books like 1 Second After come up, and you think about that situation in there and how heartbreaking that was. One thing that John did not talk about was keeping insulin cool. And so definitely, if the grid goes down, you're in a pretty bad situation there, even if you have a big stock of insulin. One of the things that I had researched before, and I'll link to it in the show notes, is the Frio insulin cooling water bags. And basically those are, if you've ever had one of those like cooling vests or a cooling bandana, it's the same kind of idea. You dip it in water, and then there's a gel inside of the bag that gets activated, and it keeps it cool. So you can put your insulin in there, and I don't know how cold it gets, but these bags are specifically for insulin. So it's the Frio insulin cooling wallet, large bag. They make all different kinds, some for the pens and all that different kind of stuff. Like I said, I'll link to it in the show notes where you can kind of go and get to it. But maybe that wallet bag, that Frio bag, coupled with some kind of root cellar or digging down into the ground, 6 feet, and making sure that you get there, can kind of keep it cool. That definitely would work. Hopefully that would work. So things to definitely consider. I did remember reading an article recently about a pen or something along those lines. And so if someone knows that, they might want to drop it in, whether you go to the Prepper website podcast.com and drop it in the comment section there, or even head over to 1776patriotusa.com and drop it in the comments there. But if I remember correctly, there's a pen that does not need to be refrigerated that's being made, and that's out there. So in that case, you would just be stocking up on the pens. So again, a lot to consider. All right, this next article is it's kind of a lengthy article. It comes to us from theprepperjournal.com, and it's entitled "Radio Silence: Communication Without Electronics." And so it's talking about silent communications. So this is written by Ann Paris over on, again, like I said, theprepperjournal.com. So let's go ahead and start reading this one. "I love modern technology, particularly the electronics that allows me to communicate so quickly and easily. Even so, the loss of that capability, for whatever reason it's lost, doesn't have to be entirely devastating. We communicate not only without our electronics, but without noise all the time. I tap my wrist, hold up my hand with my fingers splayed across a room. Instantly, I've told someone they have 5 minutes, or that I need or want 5 minutes. I tap beside my eyes, point in a general direction, and then point lower or higher in an aisle of a store. It tells somebody at the other end that I found what we're looking for, or that I want them to look at something, and then where more specifically that something is. We do it nearly instinctively, some of us more than others. While hand gestures especially change meaning culture to culture, the ability to communicate without speaking is inherent to our species. It has been since before the first cave painting. Recently, the topic of communication without radios came up. The possible reasons for a non-radio life are pretty varied. A generator or solar panel with significant damage, low winter light, extended time crisis when even rechargeable batteries are exhausted, seasons and locations when it's hard to get messages through, EMPs and solar storms, neighbors who have the skills to survive but don't have the same EMP-proof stockpiles we do, newer homesteaders and preppers who can survive but haven't moved into serious Thrive supplies yet. There are almost times we want to communicate but don't necessarily want to be heard. Hunting and tactical reasons are two of those. History and modern technology have given us a lot of options to work around those possibilities and needs. Here are a few." And so just a quick side note, there are a lot of graphics and that you want to come and check out at the prepperjournal.com. So again, like Morse code and then all kind of flag signals and stuff like that that we're going to talk about. All right, so continuing on. Morse code. Morse code can be applied to a lot of communication options. When it's primarily associated with radios, it was once a common ship-to-ship and ship-to-shore communication method using light instead. And there is a video here linked, Navy Signalman using Morse. Continuing on, it wasn't until I started looking for an image online that I realized how dependent people are on the blinker-clicker features of their flashlights for light-transmitted Morse. If you have a mil-spec light that can take that abuse, great. If not, cover and uncover your flashlight with your hand. It's still fast and easy. For some of us with broken and aging fingers, and for people who are turning their lights on and off to get the same effect, it's not only actually easier, sometimes faster, it also is going to save your light a lot of wear and tear. You can use a laser pointer for it as well, or cover and uncover a battery candle, oil lantern with a box, or an oatmeal tub, coffee can, small ones with your hands, containing light. Light stands out like it's cool at night. Even a little green, red, blue laser light, it travels a long way when it's dark. If you're only trying to not stand out to everybody with one of those insane 50-yard beams and you're working from a set, expected position, you can signal by flashing the laser light or a flashlight into your palm or into your chest, onto a tree or certain wall that's visible from another location but not most of the property. If you anticipate the need to really not be seen by anybody but your LOS partner, carry a flattened toilet paper roll wrapped around your small flashlight. Flattened but tube, not sliced. Not necessarily understanding what that is. I mean, there's a graphic here that I think that goes with. So just want you to know that. You can check that out. When you're ready to send a message back to the house, to the other side of a building, along the length of a wall, or down a roadway, cup the tube in one hand so you're blocking the back and stick the front of the light just inside it, or hold a laser sight pointer just outside it. The roll contains the light so only somebody facing you sees it. If you want, add a mirror or a white disc to the palm to make it a little easier for that person to see. I pretty much prefer those two general methods regardless, because you stand a really good chance of blinding the person you're trying to signal, or at least giving them dots in the eyes, especially with a pointer. Okay. The services have been using specific flags to communicate since some of the earliest days, from pirates warning about trying to run from them, warning others that illnesses are aboard, to requesting assistance. This site has a list of international signal flags, their phonetic names, and the Navy maritime meanings. The phonetic name becomes valuable because some of the meanings at sea translate directly or with minor modification to things we face on land too. The Morse, Semaphore, or ASL of the phonetic name can be flashed or signaled to convey a whole thought or message, just as a flag would. The flags can be made, painted on board, or drawn on cards to use in windows or to be flashed, or drawn in chalk on a wall or sidewalk as needed. It doesn't have to be fabric or flying in the air. Any flag, banner, or windsock at all can be part of group and neighbor communication. If we all normally fly the local team's colors, but somebody puts it at half-mast or upside down, they could be saying they need help, or they're ready for harvest planting assistance. One person with the weather station might say rain, so a blue banner goes up. A black cross on yellow might mean a woman went into labor and the local sheep keeper would be welcome as a midwife. A black dot might mean there's sickness, don't come calling. Okay, I just thought that was funny that the local sheep keeper will be coming as a midwife. But definitely, you know, if that's needed, that's needed, right? A flag might also just mean all's well here, and a quick snip to drop it on the way past alerts all the rest that the gunfire wasn't practice, it's real, or that there's a fire, not burning waste or smoking out bees. We can get as creative or simple as we want. Another powerful tool in the box for sending messages visually I'm sorry, let me read that again. Another powerful tool in the box for sending messages visually with the same alphanumeric capabilities of Morse is a semaphore signaling, that signal man out there with the two bright flags or cone lights. Semaphore flag signaling was also once done using a single flag in just four positions. You can find it called wigwag signaling as well. And like I said, there's a lot of graphics on this article. With two flags, there are fewer combinations to remember, but you also have to have two flags and hands available. For both, a larger line of sight space is required so the flags can be seen. Radio cue codes and TIN codes have a lot of value for quickly sending messages. Various established codes provide shorthand communications for quote-unquote suspicious vehicle, which would be 1037, quote-unquote your keying is hose and hit every branch of the ugly tree on its way down, QSD, quote report to location, that's 1025, quote stand by, QRX, and quote be super duper quiet, do not use siren or flashers, and then 1040. Those are all phrases we might use for communicating across a yard or across a farm as a simple survivor with a neighbor or family or as a group with defensive and patrol forces. TIN codes especially have a lot of pre-existing elements that are of use in many situations. They can be transmitted with clicks, whistles, a pipe, smack, with a hammer, marker on a dry erase board, flash blinker lights, or using semaphore flags and hand signals. We can also use easily modify or truncate existing codes. QRO are your troubled by static noise can become do you hear anything. A 1081 or breathalyzer report becomes just a drunk. 1090 bank alarm can become a prefacing code for an audio or visual alarm with the location following it. As with cop and amateur radio codes, there are hospital codes that can apply or be readily modified to fit life without radio communication. Heavy equipment operators and divers also have signals we can steal and modify. Knowing the common motorcyclist signals can be applied to daily life as well as serious disasters. Whenever we're ever planning to clear a house or a yard with another person or not, military and police hand signals also have applications for many situations. The numbers alone are useful. There are also action information signals that are pretty handy. The difference between stop and freeze gets used with my dumb dog 20 and 200 feet from our house with some regularity. I prefer to just go extractor or the ball from my pots and planters, but sometimes I just want her to stay generally where she is while a car passes. Quote unquote, go back translate to quote unquote out away in our world. I want her to back away from me, usually while I am playing with sharp things or might squish her. I originally thought it was just my quirky father telling dogs, the rest of the family, and hunting buddies that we were going to the vehicle with his steering wheel gesture. For a while, I thought the military had stolen the down signals from hunters with dogs. Turned out, not so much. He just modified them from his military days. Even without need for silence, it's just really easy to whistle or clap a hand once, tap a window, ring a triangle, and then make a quick gesture, as opposed to shouting 15 times or hiking out to somebody. The gestures themselves are rooted in military hand signals we each learned decades apart. In most of my lifetime's applications of them, they've had no military bearing at all, but like the ability to say I love you a last time from a window or immediately flag a distress signal in a boating savvy community, they've entered into our world and stayed in use. American Sign Language has some of the same benefits as the everyday everyone useful military signals. There are a world's wealth of truncated single gesture shorthand signs from everything from a man or female child to taking lunch. Deaf-mute people are able to hold the same sophisticated conversation as speaking and hearing folks. The addition of spelling and broader concepts to military hand signals allows ASL signers to be more specific across even distance silently. It also is just a handy skill to have and might increase your employability when you stick it on a resume. As with flags and hand signals, we can take cues from history in modern eras with leaving drawn symbols or flashing cars and protesters as well. Here's a fairly comprehensive listing of World War II symbols. It wouldn't be completely crazy talk to go with another nation's symbol, such as Germans or Russians, if you want to keep this information a little more segmented, although there tends to be a lot of commonality. The old hobo symbols can be a little tricky. I can think of three or four for safe water alone. It also means adjusting from black spot of death and X marks the spot to slashes of X's are bad and dots are good. However, from dangerous man and vicious dogs to rickety bridge or avoid this in rain, there are many apply, whether we're planning on a community, thinking Kilroy situations, or just making notes for family or core group. The symbols also allow us to quickly and easily annotate our own maps for areas of concern or resources. The limitation to all of these is line of sight. But in some too many cases, being able to communicate even from a driveway to the house, the length of a hall, or stacked in a ditch without making noise or taking a lot of time makes them worth considering. There's a good reason many of them have never faded from use, even with today's technology. And I think that's probably right there, as a side note, that's probably one of the most important, and that probably should have been the topic sentence of this whole article. There's a good reason many of them have never faded from use, even with today's technology. So, again, that's the reason why you want to apply this into your prep somehow. If you want to communicate at range in the dark, you'll need flashlights or pointers or oil candle lanterns if your non-radio needs are expected due to long duration interruptions in shipping. For us, that's balanced because we have lights on us almost always, but not always a cell signal and not always a radio. That might not hold true for everyone. Hand and flag signals are limited in range while light carries longer distance. However, blinker light comms is only really reliable at night. I may be able to use red boards, car windshield heat reflectors, or white flags to increase range in the daytime. The number one piece of gear for longer distance communications without electronics is going to be binoculars or a scope. Day or night, if I can't see what you're sending clearly, we have delays or miscommunication. They're inexpensive enough and should be part of most preparedness closets anyway. If you're mostly in brush country and are only talking about distances of double-digit yards, don't break the bank there. There are more important things. If you're looking at using blinker lights and somebody climbing a windmill or a water tower daily or weekly to do a neighborhood town flag check, a simple scope should work. It's also a lot to learn. Instead of planning to use all of them, maybe take notes, printing guides, but cherry pick. The very basic hand signals, heard, saw, numbers, armed or unarmed, child, adult, animal, danger, recover, relax, say again, and basic Morse code would take priority. 10 and Q codes can be added on. A few flags or graphics to represent ideas or situations follow. The point is not to discourage anyone with 55 million more things to learn or buy. It's that we have lots of options even if electronic-driven communication becomes unavailable. With any luck, there are some ideas here that can add some resiliency and redundancy to existing plans. And since a lot of it is learning-based, not resource-based, non-radio comms can be a way to improve preparedness with free, inexpensive skill building while saving up for purchases. Okay, so again, long article there, and I said there's a lot of graphics. There's flag graphics, there's hand signals, military signals, just a bunch of different graphics there that you want to check out. But the point is that there should be some signals that you have in your, with your group, with your family, that are not necessarily audible, that you're able to communicate with hand signals or even with light signals if you need to. So something to definitely consider there. So again, go check out the Prepper Journal. All right, guys, that's it for this this episode. If I can ask you, like I ask all the time, if you would do me a huge favor and help get the word of the Prepper Website Podcast prepperwebsite.com out there. Like I said, I keep getting great feedback. I do really appreciate that. One of the big things that you can do is go leave a review on like iTunes or Stitcher or one of the other podcasting networks. That helps tremendously, getting the word out there just by word of mouth. You can come to the website and share out the episode on social media. We made it very easy for you to link that way. And, you know, just help us do that, and that would be great. I mean, if we're providing a benefit out there and it's a blessing to the preparedness community, I would appreciate you, you know, letting people know. And I do see that out there because people are adding the podcast every single day. And again, that's very exciting for me. So I really appreciate that. And so if you get a chance, come by the prepperwebsitepodcast.com, drop me a line in one of the episodes, you know, in the comment section, or hit me up on one of the social media sites. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I do answer back. I do love communicating with people that way, and, you know, love touching base with you. So we will be back tomorrow with more great articles to share. And then, like always, if you are looking for even more preparedness, there are a ton of great articles on prepperwebsite.com. So guys, until next time, stay prepped and aware. Peace.